Live from the C.S. Lewis Center, welcome to The Kindling's Muse, an intelligent, imaginative, hospitable exploration of ideas that matter most in contemporary life. And now here's your host, Dick Staub.
This is Dick Staubach with you. You're listening to The Kindling's Muse at the C.S. Lewis Center. And for those of you joining us by podcast, we welcome you to go to our website, thekindlings.com, where you can comment on this show and others. We've got an archive there that you can check out. Tonight, we're talking about C.S. Lewis and art. We're moving into a discussion now that includes something that was very important in Lewis's life. Lewis, Tolkien, Charles Williams were all part of what was called the Inklings. And they had an informal weekly gathering of friends who loved what Nigel Goodwin just described as disputation. At the end of every week in the British education, you would read a newspaper and you were told to take a side and you would argue that side. And someone else, therefore, had to argue the other side. So every week we invite two individuals to be with us and to represent in this particular part of the conversation not their own views, but one of their multiple personalities. The views of someone in their generation or someone that might not agree with C.S. Lewis. And so their role is to, in a cordial and hospitable way, to take issue with what C.S. Lewis has said about in this case, art, so that we can get beyond simply an affection towards C.S. Lewis and his ideas, but actually wrestle with them a bit. So they're going to play the devil's advocate, and a little bit later you'll actually be able to find out what they think about C.S. Lewis. We're joined tonight by Heather Hawkins and Seth Otto. Can you give them a big round of applause? So what's wrong with Lewis's views on art? When you look at these quotes, what is something that leaps out at you as, this is either not true, or if it is true, it was true in his day, but it's not relevant anymore. Who wants to start?
I'll start with the second quote.
Okay. Heather's going to start with the second quote.
I know, I'm going out of order. But the first thing that just popped into my head right away and is that, I mean, both quotes were written, you know, over 60 years ago, and that we live in an entirely different world with an entirely different worldview of politics and technology and film and literature and music that is a completely different worldview than the worldview that he inhabited. And the first thing that popped into my head when I saw the view about the quote about surrender was that my generation and the generation below me doesn't have time to surrender to art and doesn't have time to surrender and to look and listen and receive. And if I don't like something right away, I can change it and I can IM my friends, and I can text them quickly, and I can walk out of something if I don't like it, and I don't have to stand in front of it, and I can hit delete on my computer and leave it if I don't like it, and I can walk out of the theater if I'm not enjoying it, and I can go create my own on my computer, and I can write my blog about it.
So the idea of surrendering something that your kind of basic instinct initially tells you isn't for you, is just kind of an inefficiency. It's for an earlier, more leisurely age.
No.
Wow, that sounds like what you were arguing last week, Seth. That, you know, we can't live on frantic lives. We live frantic lives. We love frantic lives.
I also think, too, it's that thing about getting, you know, he says, get yourself out of the way. But yeah. I think that a lot of the times that our generation is, you know, puts ourselves right there in the middle.
Yeah, interesting.
We just had a retreat this weekend, and one of the pieces of art we listened to was some music by Sigur Rós, and listening to it, and one of the comments that one of the young individuals made about the music was they liked the music because they can decide what it means. They are the ones that are kind of the arbiters. It's their call. They are the ones that determine. So it's kind of we create it. Who cares what the artist and why should I surrender to their view? I want to bring what I've got to it.
Well, that makes sense. How do you get yourself out of the way? I don't think it's possible. I honestly don't think it's possible. I mean, if I'm trying to get myself out of the way of the art, and there's C.S. Lewis is saying there's supposed to be like a conversation there.
Yeah.
Well, who's there to converse with if you get yourself out of the way?
One of your multiple personalities.
All right.
Nigel, how do you react to these comments?
Well, I go back again to Ruckmacher. You know, Christ didn't die to make us Christian. He died to make us human. What does a human look like? Does a human look like somebody who is cartwheeling all over the place, being pulled in 1,000 different directions at once? I think we have to stand in the culture, yet against the culture. So I think that, is the culture running us, or are we running the culture? I agree with what they're saying. It is a different world. And I think if were Lewis sitting at the table, thank you, Anton Rogers, if Lewis were actually sitting at the table today, I think he would say, that was then, this is now. So I think he would have a different approach, but I think he would be standing in it, but yet not being of it. And it seems to me that is the tension. It's a constant tension, how we all use time.
Okay.
And how time runs us. And yes, we've got all these technological means to apparently serve us, but are they dictating to us, or are they serving us? Are we more human or less human today? What is God's intentionality in making a human?
And tell me again, why would I want to surrender to Nanny 911?
Nanny 911. Why would you want to surrender? So you're saying there's just stuff that's not worth surrendering to.
Exactly.
So you have a definition of art that kind of precludes certain things to start with.
Well, not necessarily. It's not that I don't believe that there isn't validity in all art. I mean, I would defend anyone's right to make art for art's sake, even if it's crap, you know, but
okay,
time,
so you
know,
don't like the idea that he said that art for art's sake is a really bad
idea.
Distance
is probably still going to be crap up close. You know what I'm saying? So what's the point in...
Okay. So when
Lewis, I think C.S. Lewis would say, agree with Seth, and defend people's right to do that, because that's part of the dignity of their humanity. But he wouldn't get very excited about it, waste a lot of oxygen over it, and engage it, I think.
How do you guys feel about this? Art is healthy when they're either aiming at nothing but innocent recreation or handmaids of religious or moral truth. I mean, does that seem a limiting?
Extremely limiting to me.
How so?
Well, because I think we live in a hugely multicultural, multi-religious world. You know, so is that meaning that if my friend who's an atheist or an agnostic and creates a piece of art that's not defending or being a handmaid of religious or moral truth, that their art is horrible and their art isn't significant? Because maybe their art speaks to themselves, maybe their art speaks to someone else. And so are we going to say that their art or their piece of theater or their piece of music is horrible just because it's not staying within the definitions that he puts out in the quote, A or B?
But would he maybe argue that it's aiming at recreation, that person is recreational in their use of art? Because that he gives two purposes, recreation or the handmaid of religious or moral truth. If it's atheist, it's not religious truth. Maybe it's just recreation.
Yeah, no. I don't think he's devaluing it. I think I think recreation, I mean, the whole aspect of playfulness with art is involved in the meaning of recreation. And it seems to me that in our being more fully human, there must be playfulness. There must, you know, it's when people get so intense, and the church particularly gets so intense, battle strategy about what it puts out there, and, you know, put on the armor and get out there and beat them up. No, get out there and listen.
But would Lewis have thought
love.
An atheist could create a good work of art?
I'm sure he would.
Are you sure about
I don't
that?
Think it, yes.
I don't know. It seems to me like he's, you know, if you bring this quote into today's day and age, it gives us what I call the Lewis spectrum of acceptable art. art, right? And so you've got this spectrum where it's like admittedly aiming at nothing but innocent recreation all the way over to definitely the handmaids of religious or moral truth. So what's acceptable under Lewis's guidelines then, of course, is the Spice Girls, right? What also is then therefore acceptable under the Lewis spectrum is John Michael Talbot. So you've got like the playful and you've got like the religious. But Bjork is unhealthy. It's irreligious. It's pagan.
According to
Lewis. That's just the way I read it.
Björk is the Icelandic artist.
I know who she is.
For example, you know, Spider-Man 3 is acceptable, and The Passion of the Christ is acceptable, but anything by Jim Jarmusch is unhealthy. Mad Magazine, good. Tim LaHaye, artistic genius.
Wait, how's Mad Magazine? Oh, I know, because it's moral truth. I forgot.
No. That's admittedly aiming at nothing but innocent recreation.
Okay. Mr. Lewis?
I think Lewis would have felt, because of the very way he came struggling to faith, the battle that he had with belief in his own life, that he didn't become some kind of moral bastion. People may have tried to make him that with the BBC coming into his life and saying, you can reach a million people if you do this, that, and the other. But no, I think he respected while disagreeing. Healthy respect for people. The question is the artist a good artist? Not good in the moral sense. Are they gifted in what they do? And I think that would be much more his criteria. Are they good at what they do? Not their worldview and their belief, which of course will shape what they do, but are they a craftsman? Are they skilled? Are they working at it? Is it just a chance random piece? That may be their worldview, chance and randomness. Sartre is actually quite a good playwright, but he says it's meaningless that we live and it's meaningless that we die. Yet he's desperate to have meaning. So he's inconsistent with his presuppositions. I think Lewis would demand that people think about their presuppositions and try to be consistent with their presuppositions. But he would say, keep going.
So he would engage this kind of art. How does that then fit him saying that its purpose is either recreation or religious or moral truth, or it's balderdash? Are you disagreeing with Lewis's quote?
I'm both agreeing and disagreeing with it, which sounds like, hey, he's getting off the hook easy. But no, I am agreeing and disagreeing with it. And I'm presupposing that quote we have there is actually in the... I mean, we're taking a quote out of a context. I need to see the whole context, the whole conversation, the whole debate. I want to hear the protagonist. I want to hear who he's debating with. So I agree with the recreation side. I don't particularly like art for art's sake, because I don't think there is such a thing. I think whether a person is aware of it or not, they have a worldview, and that worldview shapes the way they do what they do. I do think, and they're rightly so, my generation, the Beatles, the Rolling Stones, who are still breathing, coming to the Isle of Wight, my homeland, this year to play a concert, they dislike being many, many people producing work today hate being pigeonholed by the church per se, or by Christians who think, you know, you're saying this, are you saying this, Bono, in U2? And they hate being pigeonholed. And therefore they will come out with, well, let it be for you what it is for you. And let it be for you what it is for you. And there is a sense in let the work itself speak. And let's not be too quick to put it into a frame of our own comprehension and then dismiss it.
So that really plays more to the surrender.
He's taken away my argument, Dick.
Well, yeah, yeah. Duplicitous. Heather, what else?
You want more arguments from me?
Do you have something else that, when you look at these Lewis quotes, jumps out at you as kind of not true or not relevant today?
Well, you know, I mean, I was sitting thinking when Nigel was talking about saying that this belief in every human being is fearfully and wonderfully made, and that their ideas about art should be heard and explored. And if that's true, and if we take that to the 100th percent degree, then the person's expression of violence and anger in a film that some people might find horrifically offensive still needs to be produced and heard. And if their music makes me extremely uncomfortable and I don't want to sit and listen to it, then it still needs to be made because it's fulfilling something in their need to be creative. It's fulfilling something in their voice that needs to be spoken. And even if it's not going to speak to my ear or my audience, maybe it's going to speak to someone else. I don't know who that person is, who that audience might be, but if we really take that idea that their ideas about art should be heard and explored to the fullest moment, to the fullest extent of that comment, then they should be. And then I'm disagreeing, I mean, obviously, with Lewis's quote, because I don't think then that some of those things are the handmaids of religious and moral truth.
Well, calling anything balderdash, if that's what you're saying, if Christ really came to make us human, more fully human, and like an artist's creative expression, no matter what that creative expression is or who it offends, is sort of in the journey of playing with ideas and getting that out there and becoming more fully human, to call that balderdash is incredibly dehumanizing, ultimately, and irreligious, in my opinion.
Well, of course, we're not on this platform or in this radio show to necessarily agree or disagree. I think Lewis would have loved healthy disagreement. He would not have loved sloppy, sentimental, wishy-washy, yuck agreement. You know, he would not have agreed with PC. He would have disagreed with PC. And I think Heather is right that, people must be... I mean... It is Judeo-Christianity that has bought our freedom, such as we have any. We're losing it. It was hard won, and we're losing it in the United States, America, and the UK. We are losing hard won freedom today. And that would be an interesting discussion. People, if they can get an audience, be it a pub audience or whatever, and to hear their poetry, and their poetry is what it is, so be it. I don't think Lewis would spend a lot of oxygen and a lot of time arguing against that. He would be getting on with his craft, his art, and putting that out there and letting people make their choices between dark and light and the choices of what's going on out there.
Yeah, he doesn't really, that I know of, does he kind of take any positions against art being made that he might disagree with? I don't think so. But he might call it balderdash, but that's not to say that some people want to consume balderdash.
Tolkien, his friend, and certainly Narnia, and in lots of his stories, he's not afraid of the dark. He talks very strongly about the dark. And, you only need a candle to know you're in a tunnel and there is a way out. So, I mean, he's brought up with fully understanding Plato's cave. Man chained against the wall with his back to the wall. He sees the light flickering on the wall, but he cannot break free of his chains. He cannot turn round and get out of the cave. And that's what he's brought on up on. That's what he understands, that man is trapped and man needs to be set free. And in the story of setting free, in any art form, there is dark and light. I don't know any writer or any screenwriter or any playwright who would make an all-light play and it be entertaining, or an all-dark play and it would be entertaining. Every single human being, it may just be a cleaning lady, she comes on stage, she sees the fourth wall, the audience, she blows them a kiss and she goes off. And in a very dark play, she is a redemptive moment in that play.
Yeah. It's interesting you should mention Tolkien, because actually they disagreed about artistic sensibilities at point. Tolkien was quite upset that Lewis had dedicated Screwtape Letters to him, because he didn't think Lewis should be trying to do theology, because he was a literature man. And he also didn't like Father Christmas showing up in Narnia. He felt that that was the imposition of one mythology into another. And so they had very robust disagreements about artistic sensibilities. I'm sure they debated it. And then each of them went ahead and proceeded on the path that they thought was right. So the idea, I kind of hear what's happening in this discussion, is that we're looking at a Lewis quote and probably doing exactly what Lewis would do, which is defending it, and then sometimes changing your mind about it, and because of the different issues that have been raised and the applications that have been made, so that the issue, and this is why I think what we're trying to do is important, is that Lewis has become almost a Protestant literary pope to some people, and he's quoted as kind of the final definitive answer on things, when in fact, most of his writing grew out of where he was at that time, and he actually did change over time some positions that he took,
and I think
and the issues that were important to him.
He isn't making absolutes. He's making discussion. These are not be-all and the end-all, fixed-in-time arguments. These are discussions that he's raising. You know, so it's not a fixed, I don't think it's such a fixed opinion that, you know, he can't cross the road and talk to someone who disagrees with
him. How would he have defined art? When he talks about surrendering to art, knowing Lewis, there were different ways that he would have brought definition to what would qualify as a work of art.
An artist is like God, but small.
That's M.B. Gofstein. That's not C.S. Lewis.
No, but I think he would have said, yeah, I agree with you.
Okay.
You know, God is the artist, the physician, the scientist, the great I am. He likes what he made. He's never given up on what he's made. Lewis understood the creation mandate, tend the garden. He's never taken that away. Turn it over. It's now sweat and toil. It's hard work, making art, making craft, doing it well, because everything is hard work. Anything of real worth. I think what Lewis wouldn't have liked is junk. I think what he wouldn't have liked is the way we devalue and cheapen so quickly. I think he would have spoken out against quick fix, easy answers, simplistic stuff. And I think the drip-drip effect of cinema or so much art today, the subliminal effect of that is devaluing our humanity. And I think Lewis would have said, no, away with it.
Okay.
You know?
Can I ask another question?
Yes. Yes.
So I'm curious about what you think C.S. Lewis would think about a piece of art that wasn't junk, that was fabulously intriguing and well-produced and you know, to the highest artistic standards, yet was not holding up handmaids of religious or moral truth.
Well, can you give me an example of that? Because,
or that was offensive to a highly conservative Christian audience or Muslim audience or Jewish audience for a specific political or religious reason. Yet it was still so powerfully artistically created and very wonderful. But it wasn't meeting his definition of being this handmaid of religious or moral truth. I mean, that's what scares me about that quote, because that could, you know, that's how it can get twisted for someone.
I suppose we need to understand what he means, because what you understand by a handmaid of religious and moral truth and what he understood by that may be two very different worlds. Who is the bastion? Who is the gatekeeper of religious and moral truth? And what do we actually mean? What's the incarnational meaning behind those words? Because they're not simplistic packages.
They are huge.
They are huge.
I agree.
And I think everybody speaks out of some religious or moral truth, depending on their culture, their background, their worldview, their way of seeing. So, you know, does he mean the Judeo-Christian religious and moral truth as it comes to him through the Episcopal Church or where he worships or whatever? So what does he understand by that, and what do we understand by that? And I think if the work, what is the intentionality of the work, I think is a very... The worker of the work.
You know what's interesting? If you really look closely at that quote, what he's doing is modifying the word truth with either religious or moral. That it's not really pushing a religious issue necessarily, but it is something true or not, and that's the function of art. that it's either to be pleasurable or it's to be something that is confronting truth. And some truth is very unpleasant, you know, but it's truth.
And truth is particularly unpleasant if it comes to us. And in fact, I don't think it's fully truth unless it comes to us with grace, if it comes to us with tears. You know, grace without truth is romanticism. Truth without grace is legalism. And grace and truth that I believe Lewis would have embraced is dunamis in the Greek, explosive good news.
Interesting. We're going to be back with our panelists. Seth will be back, Heather and Nigel Goodwin. And we'll be back to our live audience with their questions as well. Don't go away. You're listening to Kindling's Muse at the C.S. Lewis Center. Thank you for listening to the Kindling's Muse. If this program sparks something in you, I invite you to participate at www.thekindlings.com. That's K-I-N-D-L-I-N-G-S. Share this program, tell a friend, or just leave a comment at www.thekindlings.com.